All right, everybody, it's 7 o'clock.
My friends don't like me.
Good evening. Welcome, everyone, to the Simple Actions Group of Alcoholics Anonymous. My name is Amy, and I am an alcoholic.
Hi, Amy.
For those of you who care to join us, let's open the meeting with the Serenity Prayer. God,
grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference.
The Simple Actions Group wishes to extend a warm welcome to all in attendance this evening. These premises are non-smoking. Our group is welcome to use this room and the restrooms exclusively. They are across the main foyer and up a small flight of stairs. At this time, please silence your cell phones. Also, we respectfully ask that those present please refrain from unnecessary moving around the room. This will keep distractions and disturbances to a minimum and allow everyone to listen uninterrupted. This group practices the spiritual foundations of anonymity, singleness of purpose, and effective sponsorship. As a group, we believe that Alcoholics Anonymous provides alcoholics with a set of clear directions on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism on the basis of simple actions. These actions are contained in the book Alcoholics Anonymous. It is the purpose of this meeting to carry that clear message and to focus on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism on the basis of AA's simple actions. This is the AA preamble. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution. It does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. The format of this meeting is an open big book step study. As a group, we recognize the power of one alcoholic identifying with another alcoholic, sharing their experience, strength, and hope from the book Alcoholics Anonymous. We encourage you to engage in conversation and ask questions after the meeting pertaining to the step discussed tonight. This evening, we are discussing step 4. Please welcome our panel this evening, Rich and Iran. I will read the first paragraph on page 63, and then the panel will share for a few minutes each on the reading. Step 4, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. Next, we launched out on a course of vigorous action, the first step of which is a personal house cleaning, which many of us had never attempted. Though our decision was a vital and crucial step, it could have little permanent effect unless at once followed by a strenuous effort to face and to be rid of the things in ourselves which had been blocking us. Our liquor was but a symptom. So we had to get down to causes and conditions. Rich?
My name is Rich. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Rich.
Hey,
everyone. Grateful to be here and really, really grateful to this home group, Simple Actions, for reaching out and asking me to be of service. I think it's really something that's humbling for me just to know that I have another day sober and that I'm able to show up when asked. And you know, I rode here with three other guys, and you know, I'm grateful to have the fellowship and to be able to get in a car and get to a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I won't waste too much time on kind of teeing things up here, but I do have a sobriety date, and it's September 3rd of 2013, and I have a home group, which is a shoulder-to-shoulder group in Yorktown that meets on Thursdays and Saturdays. And you know, I have a sponsor who has a sponsor and so on. And in terms of the fourth step, you know, a little bit about my backstory. I came in 2013 or 2003 for the first time, kind of really wanting this program, and it was certainly one of the first spiritual experiences of surrender where I really wanted to, really wanted this program. And when I dove in and I got to the fourth step pretty quickly, as we do, you know, I was looking to check the boxes and get the merit badge and all that stuff, and it didn't seem like it was that hard of a thing for me. I didn't feel like I had many resentments. I didn't feel like I was mad at anyone, really, you know. And I guess what I've come to understand from just the literally one day at a time showing up through the love of the fellowship and going through the steps, not only just one time, but kind of continuously, and then working with others as well, kind of peeling back the layers of the onion, seeing that, getting to really see these resentments more. I mean, I guess I saw resentments as I'm mad at someone, you know, and to me it's a lot deeper than that, it's bigger than that. You know, I didn't feel like I was mad at my mom, for example, but I certainly have. I had a lot of resentments towards my parents, mainly, more so on the mother's side, but I still have quite a bit that I'm working through. But it's exciting today to know that there's the fourth step. But what I'll say here about just this paragraph in particular was, you know, one of the things that this program has taught me is that there was too much of me between me and me, so therefore there's too much of me between me and God. And I remember that, I believe, because I need to remember that. Not that I need to, like, spout off cool quotes to you all, but because there's a lot of cool stuff that was said over the years that I had aha moments. But now today I recognize, hopefully more often than not, that these things that stick with me are for me. They're not for you or for me to just be some awesome AA-er. But so I see a lot of the time how I'm full of self, you know, and I'm full of, throughout any given day, I'm just full of the me thoughts in this step. And well, the program in general has taught me that, you know, whether I catch a resentment, which I know is sort of the focus for tonight, which happens to me on a daily basis, but or something good is happening. You know, my brain is playing out the show in my head of how it's going to go, the things I'm going to say, things people will say back to me, and it is constantly this obsession of me. And although I'm thinking about other people, it was confusing how that was really thinking about me for a while. But now I kind of see the connection that it's about thinking others in the way of how they can be, how they can make me feel okay, you know, whether that's a relationship, you know, a girlfriend, or, you know, even a coworker, or even somebody in the program that I think is going to help me get a job or help me, like, fix my car, you know, like all of these things I can just be super hyper focused on. You know, but I don't have to worry about that today. If I show up in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, I feel like I get to detach from that a little bit by listening to people speak and share. And then I just get a little bit of that separation from me and me, and therefore I'm letting this higher power in a little bit more, little by little. And so I'm a big fan of, you know, like the meeting maker, maybe, you know, that stays before and after the meeting makes it, at least for me. Just showing up one day at a time, working this step a little bit more thoroughly each time has shown me how I can recognize that, you know, a resentment isn't rich just being angry, and there's a lot that gets in the way of me connecting with people. First, you guys loved me, and then I was able to slowly love you all back. And then, in turn, that allowed me to love my parents and my sister and brother. And slowly, I have a good relationship with them. And so the gifts are amazing today. But yeah, I'll stop on that. I think I've gone quite a few minutes. Thanks.
Thanks.
Thanks, Rich.
Okay. I was thinking about myself the whole time. Is this thing on? It's
on.
Is it on? Can you hear me now?
Yes.
Good. I don't care if you can't. All right. So that's all right. So my name is Irene. I am a real alcoholic. Let's see. I have a sobriety date. It is February 27th, 2009. I have a home group, which is AA 101. It meets on Sunday mornings at Norfolk Sedera Hospital. If you would like to come join us, just listen for my laughter. It will guide you like a beacon to the lost place of the labyrinth of the hospital. I'm just saying. And then I have a sponsor who walks shoulder to shoulder with me on this journey. He has a sponsor, and I have the privilege of sponsoring other people in this program, and it's an honor to be here tonight. All right, so with that being said, I like drinking. I love drinking. I love the effect that is produced by alcohol. It did for me what nothing else in the world would do. It made me feel good when I was not good enough, but I am good enough. Be my friend, don't be my friend. Get close, don't get too close. I like it. Drink. Go. You know that relief that I searched for a very long time, I found that in alcohol, and it worked for a long time until it didn't work at all. And then I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, and first of all, I didn't want to do Alcoholics Anonymous because it's not my idea. It's not my idea. You know, the steps sound stupid. Hanging out with people after a meeting, telling someone no, stupid, not my idea. It's not the solution I need. What I need is some time to sit in Alcoholics Anonymous, figure this out. And then I figured out how to get drunk again, so I did that. And then I came back to Alcoholics Anonymous. And, you know, it says, I love on that page we were talking about, it says, so our liquor was but a symptom. I thought it was the solution, but it was just a symptom to my problem, which I found out later in Alcoholics Anonymous. And then what I love is it says, it could have little permanent effect unless at once followed by strenuous effort to face and to be rid of the things in ourselves which have been blocking us. See, I thought it said pretty much to face, and then I'll deal with them later like I always do, and I'll tell you a little bit about what I want to tell you, and then I'll be fine, right? That's what I thought it said. So I did. I came to Alcoholics Anonymous the second time. The first time I had a job, I had a life. The second time I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, I had nothing. I was a homeless bum pissing himself. I couldn't stay sober at all. And then what happened to me was I came to Alcoholics Anonymous desperate, willing, like determined to do a four step. And so I did a very well thought out four step. Even the person I told me it was well thought out, which I thought was cool. But what they were telling me is like I was hiding everything. I only told you what I wanted to tell you, and I was only gonna give you as much as I possibly could. And then I went to the 8 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, and then I tried to kill myself because I was not ready to tell the truth about myself or see the truth about myself. You know, the truth of the matter is I don't like myself mostly. And myself, I use you guys as an excuse to blame it on you. That's really the truth of most of myself. Selfishness, dishonesty. Yeah, I don't like the way you look at me, so I'm going to treat you horribly, which is really the root of my trouble, is I'm fearing not being good enough, or you're not going to like me. You know, so I discovered in Alcoholics Anonymous the symptom of my problem, or the solution to my problem, before I found the solution to my problem today, is a drink. And how do I get rid of that? I have to get rid of myself. And I'm pretty selfish and self-centered, and that is the root of my trouble. And driven by 100 forms of fear and self-delusion, I will get drunk. Again, I did not believe that until I was really, really, really ready to get rid of it. That's all I got on that.
Thanks, Ari.
Thank you. We're going to continue on page 64.
I love that page.
Therefore, we started upon a personal inventory. This was step 4. A business which takes no regular inventory usually goes broke. Taking a commercial inventory is a fact-finding and a fact-facing process. It is an effort to discover the truth about the stock in trade. One object is to disclose damaged or unsaleable goods, to get rid of them promptly and without regret. If the owner of the business is to be successful, he cannot fool himself about values. We did exactly the same thing with our lives. We took stock honestly, First, we searched out the flaws in our makeup which caused our failure, being convinced that self, manifested in various ways, was what had defeated us. We considered its common manifestations.
Should we just go back in order?
Yeah.
Rich alcoholic. Yeah, just thinking more about this paragraph here. I mean, I kind of had a little bit of experience with this even today. I mean, and I'm so grateful for the humility of knowing that at any given time, I can be incapable of being honest with myself. I can have distorted and delusional views about, especially, you know, if I catch a resentment, about what's really going on and what my part is. So I'm constantly trying to let people in, the men, you know, like a handful of men in this program into my life so I can get perspective. And move forward and make the next best decision I can make with terms to big decisions in life. I mean, small ones seem to add up to big ones, but a good example here for me was just this past summer. I ended up with a pretty big resentment, and you know, there was a relationship that ended, and I dove right in, and it was like a knee-jerk reaction that I dove right into this program. Went to a meeting, you know, went through a lot of the different emotions, and even connected with family about it, which was like a really kind of a breakthrough moment, you know, after I spoke to my mom about kind of what happened fairly quickly after. It was a pretty emotional moment because it was intentional because of, you know, this program, these steps, knowing that she can handle more than, you know, than I think that she can. And a lot of times I disconnected from that relationship because I didn't want to get her upset or et cetera, et cetera. So, you know, after speaking with my sponsor and a few other men for a couple days, you know, I was able to speak to her about what was going on. And it was freeing. It was so freeing after I was able to do that. And slowly but surely, just continued to go to some meetings. And, you know, it was recommended to me that I should do an inventory, a fourth step on this particular instance in life and or difficult period. And you know, and I did. And I learned a lot more about the fourth step through that process. I learned, you know, the fact-finding and fact-facing process was just absolutely beautiful for me. I mean, I did the fourth and fifth a couple of times up till this point, but I really felt like I finally did it, you know. Just being that I was a little bit more open, I had that gift of desperation again to be recommitted to doing another fourth step, and you know, I took a look at some of these fears and was asked, you know, what do I think the fears are originating from? Maybe what do I usually do when they pop up, and what could I do instead? And that was like revolutionary for me to kind of look at those fears and to see how when these things would pop up in the past, I wouldn't really feel much because I would go to my old solutions, which, you know, I'm not good at connecting the stories a lot, but earlier I said 2003, that was my initial kind of surrender to the program. I was in and out for 7 years until that date of 2013. But, you know, whenever I would go and be, you know, deal with relationship issues or move somewhere new and just get uncomfortable, like I would go to the old solution of like being everything to everyone and trying to be everywhere at once and never be just where I'm at. And that always, you know, after 3 months and the pain wears off of the last drinking bout, you know, I quickly and easily disconnect from the relationships that are keeping me sober and giving me that humility. So, you know, so to be in this place finally where I get to see that, you know, I'm praying more at night. I'm saying, you know, your will, not mine, be done repeatedly just to go to sleep, and it's working. I'm starting to do a 10th step and all of this stuff just from the pain, you know. But I embrace it today. Like, if I go through life, I'm going to hit pain spots. And, of course, our literature says that pain is the touchstone of spiritual progress. And I know that's true for me today. But it was absolutely a fact-facing and a fact-finding, or other way around, process for me this last time doing a fourth step. I really learned a lot about myself. Like, the fear of not being liked is really strong. The fear of not feeling good is one that pops up a lot. Like, if I don't want to not feel good, so I'm going to do things or drink a lot of caffeine or do whatever I can to feel good. And it's okay. I mean, you know, that I engage in some of these things, but just being able to be open and seeing them more for what they really are gives me a lot of progress and a lot of hope for not ending up with the solution that I always did, which was alcohol, because that's my best solution, right? Puts me in that spot where I don't have to think about any of that stuff, and I can connect with everybody in the bar room. And really, I'm extremely talented at isolating in a room full of people. I feel like I can do that in a meeting, even. You know, I can do the surfacey conversations, and you know, letting people really in is a difficult thing for me. And I remember about a year in, I got to a point where I felt like if I moved from Williamsburg, Virginia, where I currently live, I would be sad. And that was like a big thing, because I thought I was this like gypsy that could go anywhere and connect with anyone. And really it was that I was just not connected to anyone. Like, you know, only like, you know, a girlfriend or aka hostage of mine might be somebody that I, like, you know, dump everything on throughout life. But I finally was in a place where I was plugged in with some people that really loved me, and I started to love them back. And, you know, that was because of this this step, you know, was a pivotal part of it. Thanks.
Well, okay. Therefore, we start on a personal inventory. A business which takes no regular inventory usually goes broke. Well, I was broke a long time. I still might be broke, too, and I'm a business owner. But thanks to the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, I have my own business today. And I was sitting here on the way here, and I was like, you know, why did I make such a difficult idea about this taking inventory stuff? Like, I have to take inventory. How many glasses do I have? How many, you know, I have to know these things, right? And then I was like, and then if it's not working, what I usually do, like, they put it on clearance. They just get, you know, so it can sit there for a minute and you hope someone else will pick it up and take it away, right? And that's really all this inventory was for me, really, was like an opportunity to look at what I have and go, okay, I don't need that anymore. Yeah, you know, lying, stealing, maybe manipulating should probably go away. But we're going to put it on clearance because we might need it, because it's our go-to thing in case of an emergency. You never know. You never know, because it's not my decision to decide when it goes away. It's God's. But it's my job to know what I've noticed go away or what I haven't. And then I love that if the owner of the business is to be successful, he cannot fool himself about values. And that is very true about my life. You know, if I want to just live, I have to know what the values are that I want to live with. You know, what are the values? Do I want to be dishonest? Because I can make that choice. You know, I can look at the truth that I want to be dishonest, or I don't want to be dishonest. I want to be the good person I've always been. I don't want to lie. I don't want to be taken for granted. I don't want to be abused, and I don't want to abuse other people. I don't want to lie to people. Like, those things, I can know what I want to keep and what I don't. But I have no control of what is done with them. I just have to see the truth of when that. Why do I lie to you every time you just look at me that way? Oh, because it's easy. Because I don't want you to think less of me. Oh, there's something new. You know, so the best thing about this inventory is it allows me to see the truth about myself for the first time. Something I never see. I can only see the truth about you, which is all y'all are messed up. But it was hard to see the truth about me, which is I'm a scared little boy who is afraid of everything and will do anything to try to save what he doesn't even really want in this world. That's all I got on that.
Thank you.
All right, we're going to continue on page 64. Resentment is the number one offender.
Bam.
It destroys more alcoholics than anything else. From it stem all forms of spiritual disease. For we have been not only mentally and physically ill, we have been spiritually sick. When the spiritual malady is overcome, we straighten out mentally and physically. In dealing with resentments, we set them on paper. We listed people, institutions, or principles with whom we were angry. We asked ourselves why we were angry. In most cases, it was found that our self-esteem, our pocketbooks, our ambitions, our personal relationships, including sex, were hurt or threatened. So we were sore. We were burned up. On our grudge list, we set opposite each name our injuries. Was it our self-esteem, our security, our ambitions, our personal or sex relations which had been interfered with?
Okay, I really like the resentment as the number one offender, and my grand sponsor had said at one point when I was going through an inevitable relationship struggle about 6 months that I had at the time, but he says, you know, we say resentment is the number one offender, but I think that relationships can be as well. But then I think we settled in on the fact that, like, well, relationships are just full of resentment, so that's why. But in expectations, because I also learned another thing that I need to keep in my head so that I can hear it, is that resentments are expectations are resentments waiting to happen. And so again, relationships are full of those. And therefore, when I'm dealing with a resentment, and like I alluded to, I had that experience even today, you know, and I was trying to trick myself that I wasn't really dealing with it, and you know, but of course my head was continuing to think about it in various ways, even when it was thinking, I'm not mad about this, but you know, the knee-jerk reaction to call another alcoholic. Or even text today, you know, calling certainly better, but in speaking to them about, you know, what's going on and getting some perspective, you know, and today I was like, no, I want some real feedback about this. I'm not mad at all, but but it's just so apparent to me today that the bondage of self is just so prominent when the resentments come into play. I mean, I am just full speed ahead. I mean, I like to think about my alcoholism in general, like this speeding bullet train of me thoughts, you know, like just in general, like I'm just obsessed with me, and alcohol shuts that down. So the resentment just speeds that up, you know, and meetings and the tools is what helps me slow these things down and gives me the humility, you know. Humility for me today is always evolving the definition, but more about, like, just a true respect perspective of, you know, who and what I am and what's really going on. You know, when I look in the mirror, what am I really seeing? You know, like somebody described it to me one time as, like, if I'm a good guitar player, then I should be able to say to myself that I'm a good guitar player. Like, I'm not just okay, or I'm not, like, amazing. Like, I should have humility about exactly the true reflection of what's going on. And so it's not me just being, like, modest. It's, like, me really getting down to the root of what's really going on. So I need that when it comes to resentments, so I found. And, you know, I mean, even just walking into this meeting and praying and, you know, and hearing Irene speak and just the love of the fellowship, you know, the unconditional love, which is certainly a big part of what God is for me today and what this solution is for me today. It's like this resentment is just, like, you know, just going away, like it wasn't no big deal for me. And but it's obvious today that when I'm full of these resentments, you know, when I've had these experiences, again, I think the best examples are these relationships, the new relationships, you know, when I'm starting to get I can't even work at work, you know, because I'm like this and that, and like they're not doing what I want, and you know, I can't even focus, and I'm like blaming it on work, and I need to cut down on the caffeine because I'm getting anxious all of a sudden, and all these other things are the problem. But the saddest thing is that I don't have the same amount of serenity to connect with people in my life. The fellow alcoholic who needs somebody to listen to them and help them get some humility for that day. I don't have the same serenity to you know, call my mother and have a loving conversation with her, because I'm just so full of this crap in my head about people, places, and things. You know, and it happens all the time, but just knowing what it is, and or just having the practice, I think, of meeting with a sponsor regularly, because when I'm new, I mean, again, like if you told me it was resentment, I'm like, I'm not mad at anybody. I'm cool. I'm good. Like, I love everyone. My mom is great. Like, you know, I was really good at lying to myself about any of this being there, being real. You know, and I still don't have it figured out. And I hear a lot of old timers talk about, you know, the more they stay sober, the more they recognize that, you know, we'll never have it figured out. That's why I need help. That's why I need to constantly call on the men in this program and to ask for help. You know, I don't want to have it figured out. You know, I want to call people and connect with people and do this, the we of the program, do it with the we, you know, because I'm just another alcoholic, you know, who's not a bad person trying to get good, but a sick person trying to get well. And I've seen some people get well that give me some hope today. And, you know, with the one alcoholic helping another alcoholic, this step and these resentments can be washed away sometimes quickly, but sometimes very, very slowly. I've noticed, because some of these relationship ones have taken me weeks or months, but the commitment to them, the hope, because of showing up at meetings and constantly hearing the message again and again, having the hope that I will get there. I will get to where I need to be to do the next right thing. A lot of times I know what the next right thing is, but I'm not there yet. I don't want to give it up. But I know I will, because you guys have shown me over and over and over again that I can be okay as long as I don't drink and I work this program. Thanks.
So what had happened was the number one offender, I thought you guys were the number one offender, because you guys always never did what I wanted you to do. You never behaved. You never gave me what I wanted. You took when you should have been given. You guys were the number one offender. I was perfect little angel. I think I just even almost felt the vomit from that malarkey. I believed. For me, that's the truth. The resentment is the number one offender. Like, I mostly was, when I sat down, I remember, like, sitting down with the well thought list, and I was like, I'm mad at my mother because she gave me up at birth. And now I go, thank God, because I had a great life. But I couldn't see that at the moment. My resentments are based on what I believe you guys did to me. But I never saw it, that it was like, that's all I think a resentment is that you guys did something to me. And my sponsor always says, I can find resentments, the first two columns, on any bar stool around the world. Like, I can find, this person did this, don't you agree, let's get drunk. Like, I can find those anywhere. And I was like, yeah, that's ridiculous. Then I was like, oh, that's kind of true. That's, like, seriously true, bro. And but it's like, everywhere I go, my resentments are all based on pushing me away from the truth. Because I don't want to look at myself, because I don't like myself, I can't stand myself, I'm not good enough, Mary, I'm good enough, I love you, I don't love you. Like, anything to make me hate you and disgust with you will push me away from you, will push me away from God, which pushes me into my drink, my favorite friend, my buddy. You know, when I'm living in resentments, I want my buddy. There's only one person who can fulfill the need I need at that point, which is a good old drink a Jack, you know, maybe even John. You know, those guys are good to me. Mm-hmm. They treat me well when I'm living in resentment, you know. But living in resentment today, being sober, is like a whole new, that's hard, you know, because I was just thinking about it on my way in. I had some inventory that I had done in September that I held on to till January. So I had a lot of resentments, like, festering inside my soul. And I know that the solution is to do the fifth step, to do 6, 7, 8, 9. I know the solution. I know what it's like to be free from being alcohol being my constant thought, being put in a situation where all those things, I know what it's like to be free from that. But I will suffer because I like that too. I like to suffer. And I like resentments because they are just suffering. Poor me. Poor me. Pour me another drink. Because that's really what I want, you know, living in resentment. I love that, but it says it's when the spiritual malady is overcome that's what I'm looking for. A spiritual malady. Now, I didn't come to Alcoholics Anonymous to get holier than thou. I did not come to Alcoholics Anonymous. I did come to Alcoholics Anonymous to be floating like a Buddha, though, because I thought that was kind of cool. But I'm all like, but I wanted to have magical powers. That kind of God would be cool. You know what I mean? Like, you know, pardon. You know, that would have been cool. But I didn't want to deal with God. I didn't think that I had a spiritual malady. I didn't think that that was the truth. I didn't think God could solve all my problems. If God could solve my problems, he would have done it a long time ago. I didn't think that was the solution. I still didn't think your solution was the truth. But the truth about my problem was, I know that I was living in pain and disgust and bitterness and hatred for myself and for every human being in the world, and I did not want to drink again, and I kept getting drunk. And I was like, I'm not going to drink today, and I was drunk again, but I hated the whole world and I hated myself, and I repeated and repeated, and I didn't want to do it again. And so I had to have faith that you guys might know a little bit of something about what was going on. But I love this line. We ask ourselves why we were angry. In most cases, it was found that our self-esteem, our pocketbooks, our ambitions, and our personal relationships, including sex, were hurt or threatened. That is the truth about almost every single resentment I have ever had. To this day, it's about my pocketbook. You messing with my money, I will cut you. You know what I mean? You telling me I'm not good enough to get somewhere, or I'm not good enough to do something, or I've got an ambition to be the best person at my job or whatever it is, and you're stepping away. Who's this new person? I will cut you. You know, you're messing with my hey, I have a personal relationship here. This is my friend. Who are you to get involved with my friend? This is my friend. That's my lover. That's my mom. That's my, you know, like, I will cut you. Like, that is my life. And that is, I have a resentment for you just trying to be you. I resent you for you being okay with who you are, because I'm not okay with who I am. That's all I got.
Okay, turning to page 65. We went back through our lives. Nothing counted but thoroughness and honesty. When we were finished, we considered it carefully. The first thing apparent was that this world and its people were often quite wrong. Mm-hmm. To conclude that others were wrong was as far as most of us ever got.
Yep.
The usual outcome was that people continued to wrong us and we stayed sore. Sometimes it was remorse, and then we were sore at ourselves. But the more we fought and tried to have our own way, the worse matters got. As in war, the victor only seemed to win. Our moments of triumph were short-lived.
Okay. So, thinking about this, just thinking about lately how, you know, I came out of that rough spot in the summer, early fall, and then, as this program would usually have it for me, things started to have an upswing. And I feel like I'm hitting on all cylinders, and things are going good at work or better at work, and even relationships, I feel more connected to the program and the people. And And then all of a sudden, I think that there's certain spots whenever I start to feel good, I want to feel better. And so I was thinking, I was texting my sponsor even at work the day that it kind of finally hit that I was starting to feel good again. And I was like looking for new jobs, like at work while I was on the company's time. And I was like, this isn't right. But I was telling on myself. So I was sort of resting on that laurel. But you know, but I start to get in this mindset where, you know, I'm trying to do everything all at once. I'm trying to be everywhere and gaining the confidence, and all of a sudden everybody's wrong again and I'm right and I've got the answers. And I think that just ebbs and flows for me all the time. And thank God it does, because I need to be humbled and I need to recognize that, that I'm not always right. And, and what really counts today is not, you know, how awesome my title is at work or how much money I make or, you know, even how amazing of an AA program I work, but like just the ability today to connect with people or not to connect with people, the ability for me to allow people to love me or for me to love people back. And there's been some huge wins in that area for me. I've seen, you know, normally we're like, work is a good example in there a lot, of course. And, you know, people will just start, you know, being full of little resentments with bosses or coworkers. And, you know, for a while, my first few years of work, you know, I would just kind of like stand back and not engage. And I'm still like that for the most part, 100% not me and how I normally am. It is absolutely a credit to this program. And, you know, people, I was even wearing this shirt the other night. People were laughing at me, that says, like, keep calm, I'm rich. And and that was a gift that a coworker gave me for, like, a Secret Santa. And it was like, yeah, because, like, you're, like, the calmest guy in the office and your name is Rich. And, you know, and I get that a lot, that that I'm this calm individual. And I'm just not, you know, I'm not normally, like, that's just not me left to my own devices. Like, I'm not that calm, you know. I can snap and have the Irish temper and, you know, and want things to be my way. But I'm good at the same note. I've always been good at sort of just keeping it in my head and stuffing it down. So there's certainly a bit of a balancing act there, but you know, I just rest today on the fact that it just helps me in so many areas of my life not to be caught up in the resentments for a long period of time, or to, you know, to be able to see through a project at work, you know, and not waste a whole bunch of time just being angry at the people that are maybe, you know, just not having a good day. But I like to bring it back to family most of all. I mean, I have a father who's health is declining, and he's been living with Parkinson's for quite a few years now, and he's got this attitude about him that's just amazing. He's certainly one of my heroes, and he just connects with people no matter what. And but he's been losing his ability to speak, but he still goes to, like, cards a few days a week to play with the other people in the retirement community, and he's still, although I'm sure it's getting to him, he's, you know, he just keeps his spirits up, you know. And he's always had this perspective, even when we're, like, upset with mom, you know, he's like, that's just how she is, you know, that's just how she is. And he's just a great example for me of letting go and letting God and just loving no matter what. And but I recognize today that, like, I don't know how he does it without help. Like, I guess he's figured it out somewhere along the way, but, like, this alcoholic needs a lot of help to do that. Like, a lot of help. You know, because I go back to my old methods and ways, and like I said, lately, you know, I've been a little bit on my high horse. But because things are good, and I am starting to think about you know, where people could be doing things better, but not me. So it's just good perspective. Yeah, I think I'll turn it over. Thanks.
I think where people can do things better too. It's usually easier if you do it my way. It's easier because I'm always right. That's why it's horrible when you do it your way and it comes out great. So I was sitting here thinking about this story. Well, it's experience, because it actually happened. So I'd been about three years sober. Okay, maybe 2 years sober, 2.5 years sober. Yeah, 3 years sober. And you know, I don't know about anybody else, but I call it the chocolate cake weight that happens when you first get sober, because you eat a bunch of chocolate cake and sugar and coffee and cookies and pies. Oh my, and can I repeat? You know what I mean? Like I gotten a little bigger. Okay, a lot bigger. Super where I had noticed it and said I probably should do something about bigger, you know? And so I decided to walk into the 7-Eleven. All I wanted was a pack of Newports. That's it. Nothing more, nothing less. I didn't need attitude. I just needed a pack of Newports. So I walked into the store, and the lady was behind the counter, and she just looked at me and she said, "Are you carrying twins?" And I said, I look around because I knew she won't talk to me. She don't know me, I'll cut her. And so I'm looking around. And I'm like, "Are you talking to me?" And she goes, "Yeah, your belly's bigger than mine." And now see, what Iran should have done was I should have cussed her out, picked up the register, threw it across, ran to the beer thing, grabbed a couple of bottles and said, "Picking up some pennies is a bitch, don't you think?" And that's what I should have done. But all I did was, I said, "Can I have a pack of Newports, please? Thanks. Have a good day." And see, I walked out of there, one, without a resentment, and two, without being in prison, because I would have cut her. I would have cut her. But the reason I say that is the truth of the matter is my reaction also defined my resentment. And I didn't know that for a very, very long time. Like, my reaction to life will define how hard I resent you. If she'd have said that on a bad day and I'd have been like cussing her out, I could have been drunk in 5 minutes. But God does for me what I can't when I'm paying attention, or actually when I'm not either. Because see, that my reaction should have been simply the way I should have responded, but it didn't bother me. Okay, now I lied. I got on the phone like nobody's business. I was like, "Do you know what she just said to me? Oh my God, no!" You know, I mean, like I was there. But what happened was my reaction to her and my reaction afterward had changed. You know, so my reaction in life had actually changed, which means my resentment had absolutely already changed before I even did the work on it. So I love that the line, it says, "The more we fought and tried to have our own way, the worse matters got. As in war, the victor only seemed to win. Our moments of triumph were short-lived." See, I could have tried to go to war over a belly, or instead, my triumph was to live, you know, and I get to live today. I get to live from the freedom from that. I get to live without her owning space in my head for something that's nothing that has to do with me. It has to do with where she's at. God save her from being angry. And so all I can say is a resentment is the number one offender, because I will cut a person if you mess with me the wrong way. But I also have some tools to use, and I have reactions to life that could be completely different.
Page 66.
Ooh.
"It is plain that a life which includes deep resentment leads only to futility and unhappiness. To the precise extent that we permit these, do we squander the hours that might have been worthwhile. But with the alcoholic, whose hope is the maintenance and growth of a spiritual experience, this business of resentment is infinitely grave. We found that it is fatal. For when harboring such feelings, We shut ourselves off from the sunlight of the spirit. The insanity of alcohol returns, and we drink again. And with us, to drink is to die. If we were to live, we had to be free of anger. The grouch and the brainstorm were not for us. They may be the dubious luxury of normal men, but for alcoholics, these things are poison. We turned back to the list, for it held the key to the future. We were prepared to look at it from an entirely different angle. We began to see that the world and its people really dominated us. In that state, the wrongdoing of others, fancied or real, had power to actually kill. How could we escape? We saw that these resentments must be mastered, but how? We could not wish them away any more than alcohol. This was our course. We realized that the people who wronged us were perhaps spiritually sick. Though we did not like their symptoms and the way these disturbed us, they, like ourselves, were sick too. We asked God to help us show them the same tolerance, pity, and patience that we would cheerfully grant a sick friend. When a person offended, we said to ourselves, "This is a sick man. How can I be helpful to him? God, save me from being angry. Thy will be done."
I love that prayer. And I fell in love with it more so over the last 6 months. But you know, and it's one of those prayers too, because I mean, I certainly try to put it in perspective and know that I mean, I'm sick. I'm on this journey, like I said, and I need help. But it is the prayer. At least the second part of the prayer, like I said, was the thing that helped me get to sleep when I was really dealing with some deep resentments. And thankfully, every day I was carried, literally carried forward by the fellowship, by the men in this program that have kind of risen up around me. I mean, the book talks about creating the fellowship we crave, you know, and all of those years that I was... you know, a little bit in AA, but more so just around AA. You know, I was falling short because I wasn't ready yet of really plugging in and creating the fellowship I crave, and having those people to be able to give me the humility and carry me through those tough moments. And like I said, it's just a gift to get the gratitude that comes from what happens, you know, in a meeting or one alcoholic sharing with another alcoholic. I mean, everything today from getting in the car with a few other guys in this program to riding down and talking about our weekends and to just hearing Iran share and just getting some breaks from that madness in my head where, you know, I'm still not sure what things are actual resentments in my head, but they actually take up a lot of space, whatever they are. They're me thoughts. I know they're that. And there's so much more peace that comes, and I can sense the ability to connect with people like I always want to. Like, that's what I always wanted when I drank. I just wanted to connect. I just wanted people to love me. I wanted to find a relationship, to not have to do life alone, you know. And what a hard pill to swallow that is, that, you know, one of the guys in the program has said, you know, he said that he had to, his sponsor told me he had to learn how to have a relationship with the men in this program in order to eventually have a relationship with a woman. And you know, that... what that said to me, because was that I have to learn how to plug in and have these unconditionally loving relationships with people before I can have more of the really meaningful you know, intimate relationship down the road. You know, working on, what, 4.5 years or so, and there's a guy back in Williamsburg that says, you know, the advice of maybe we shouldn't get into a relationship in the first year. He's like, I say 5 years. And he's got like 20-something years. And, you know, and I keep thinking back to that because I was like, man, I guess that's going to be true for this guy. And even then, it's such a gift because making the ideals list after doing, you know, the fourth step and really, really having the capacity to possibly love somebody, you know, is maybe just starting to happen for me. And yeah, I mean, today, even though I, you know, I just turned 35 years old, I couldn't be more at peace with the fact that, you know, I'm not in a relationship, don't have kids. You know, before I'd be all crazy about, well, my father, I don't know how long he's gonna live, and want to have him see me get married, and want to have grandkids, and you know, them to have, you know, all this crap. And really, they don't care about that. My dad doesn't care about that. They want to see me stay sober, and I'm chasing after all of these things and thinking about me and copping resentments and trying to make up for lost time. You know, and today you guys are teaching me how to slow down, take it one day at a time, go to the meeting, Rich. The meeting is not going to get in the way of your career or your relationship. You're going to end up with I have ended up with a flourishing career. And the more I do, the better that gets. The more Alcoholics Anonymous I do, the better that stuff gets. Like, without a doubt, the moral of my life is full. So, like, just the madness of how I looked at it completely backwards for a while. But I needed all those 7 years to get really beat up. So, I'm going to give my friend Iran a couple more minutes. But I really appreciate everybody, the group, for having me and inviting me out here. I know I needed it. So, I hope somebody else needed it, too. Thanks.
Okay, so I'm sitting up here crying because I'm a sissy, and because I was just in so much awe of gratitude and happiness from this program, like how free I am from that bondage of self, and how free I am to be alive and to be living, because I'm not supposed to be here. I should be somewhere else. I should be dead or in prison or just laying under a bridge somewhere, and I'm not. And it's just amazing to feel the freedom that has happened as a result of taking the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. So real quick, I just want to touch bases on this simple little prayer. It's the second time in the book they've asked us to pray. The first time was in How It Works. It's the first time, How It Works, it says, we ask, I'll read it real quick because I like it. It says, we ask his protection and care with complete abandon. I was taught every time we ask, it's a prayer. So it's the second time they said we ask, and so it says here, in this little prayer, it says, we ask God to help us show them the same tolerance, pity, and patience that we would cheerfully grant a sick friend. When a person offended, we say to ourselves, this is a sick man. How can I be helpful to him? First of all, I don't want to be helpful to no one because I think about myself. But I don't want to be angry, though, either, because I'm a nice person. But what it made me really think about a lot, even if I go back to when I first looked at this and even today, the tolerance, pity, and patience, that's all I've ever wanted from people in my life. You know, and what if they were sick? What if that person that just did this to me was sick? There was the first time I got a little hope that it maybe wasn't so bad. Like if I looked at it and go, what if they were sick too? And what if I gave them what I wanted, which is just some patience and tolerance and some pity. Pity. That's all. I'll take pity, you know? You know, and God saved them from being angry. God saved me from being angry. It doesn't save them. It says save me. Oh, yeah, that's about me. Save me from being angry. Thy will be done. It's a simple prayer. But it changed with that little bit of like, maybe they're sick too. It was enough for me to look at it a little bit differently. I know that this is the end. I want to thank you guys all so much for having us here. Again, if you're new, I would suggest that you find someone who's properly armed with the facts about themselves, which means that they know that once they start, they cannot stop. And they have a mind that will constantly get them drunk, who's willing to take you through the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, which I have found to be in the book named Alcoholics Anonymous, One Step at a Time. Thank you all for having me.
Thank you. We're going to pass the baskets in accordance with the seventh tradition. The seventh tradition states every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. While contributions cover each group's rent and other expenses, the seventh tradition is essential at every level of AA service. It is both a privilege and a responsibility for groups and members to ensure that not only their group, but also their intergroup, central office, local services, district, area, and the general service office remain self-supporting. This keeps AA free of outside influences that might divert us from our primary purpose, to help the alcoholic who still suffers. Although the amount of our contribution is secondary to the spiritual connection that unites all groups around the world, we may want to remember that a dollar does not support as many services as it used to. Announcements. Are there any AA-related announcements? Yes.
Thank you, TJ. Thanks,
DJ. Simple Actions is a home group. If you are interested in joining our home group, please see one of us after the meeting. Home group members, please raise your hands.
Strong.
Literature is available on the table over here. Please see me or any home group member after the meeting if you are interested in purchasing one of the books. Sponsorship. Sponsorship in AA is yours for the asking. We urge you, do not delay. If you have questions or would like additional information about sponsorship, I will be available at this table after we close the meeting. Please feel free to come talk to me. Reminders, smokers, please use the butt can provided outside. Stay well away from the church doors. All meeting audio recordings and upcoming events are posted on our website, simpleactions.net. Could we please thank the panel again for sharing? Thanks to all who participated. After we clean up, all are invited and encouraged to continue the conversation on the step discussed tonight at the meeting after the meeting, which will be held at Plaza del Sol.
Plaza del Sol.
And will someone volunteer to read the last two paragraphs on page Grant?
Read the last two paragraphs. Grant.
Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to Him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happiness. May God bless you and keep you. Good luck.
Thanks, Grant. We have a nice way of closing.
That was fantastic. Thank you, Rich.
Thank you. That was great.
Our Father,
Father,
who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. Lead us not to temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, the power, and the glory, forever and ever. Amen.
Stay.